You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, community, environment, all of the six areas of the Healthful Living model, which you can read more about at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate and co-host of Reality Sandwich. My co-host Julie is off this week, and I'm sitting in for her, and we've got an amazing guest today, another author. We love having authors on because we just get to have tremendous deep insight into really valuable content from those who have lived it, written about it, and who are sharing part of their life's purpose to empower others with their knowledge. And today we're going to be speaking with author Florence Falk. She's a PhD. She's a writer, teacher, and psychotherapist. She's been in private practice for over 20 years. She teaches workshops. She's lectured at the American Association for Transpersonal Psychology as well. And her new book is called On My Own, The Art of Being a Woman Alone. Now, listeners are saying, gee, that's an interesting topic for Healthful Living and for Reality Sandwich. And, you know, we were thinking about this several months ago when we got the opportunity to interview Florence. And I was going through her book and some of her materials and just finding it just so absolutely compelling. And what a lovely component of our individual and collective realities in our world that, you know, we should really spend some time talking about. We've done past shows about relationships and about love and all different aspects of life and healthful living, and we haven't yet spoken about the sheer fact that there's also being alone and being on your own and the virtues and power that one builds within their own being in that process as being really essential to all of us. I know myself, I mean, I'm now a married man, so I'm definitely like in that demographic, right? But I can absolutely speak to the need for individual aloneness, both in my life now and certainly for the many, many years before I ever met a partner. So, my goodness, there's such societal stigma of being alone, and particularly of women. Judgments that we have in our society and belief systems about what that means, none of which are personally empowering or really have anything to do with the actual individual involved. And we are sick and tired here at Healthful Living and Reality Sandwich of perpetuating, for lack of a better way of saying it, useless judgments and stigmas in our society. So with the embracing loving notion of setting those behind ourselves and moving towards what's real and honoring of one another, I welcome today's guest to the show, Florence.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. So your book is called On My Own, The Art of Being a Woman Alone. And I want to just ask you first, please share with our listeners a bit about why this book and how it came to be.
It came to be when I was sitting and having a session with one of the women whom I've worked with, who in the book is fictionalized as Lisa. And in actual fact, it was a woman at that time in her early 30s, very, very attractive, very sophisticated in many ways, a writer, and always had a boyfriend, and always had a boyfriend waiting in the wings. And at this particular juncture, the man she was with and she, who had been together for several years, were in the process of breaking up. And for the first time in her adult life, Lisa was without a man waiting in the wings. And she sat back on the couch and she looked at me and she said, "What am I going to do? I don't know how to be a woman alone." Mm. So that was the question, and it hung in the air. It was utterly palpable. Lisa had a great sense of irony, and she looked at me and she said, "Well, I can't write about that. You ought to be doing that." And I have written about a lot of other subjects, a lot to do with theater, but at that point I was or at least I thought I was, very involved in sketching out another topic for a book, but the idea wouldn't go away. And after a while, I realized, well, I'm one of those women she's talking about. I'm obviously older than she is, and I've been married twice. I have grown children. She couldn't have known at that moment that I was a woman alone. She might have intuited it, but she didn't know in any actual sense that that was true. But it was such a resonant question, and it really started a whole chain of thoughts and then events, and obviously culminated in the book.
Certainly.
Now, there's quite a societal default expectation we have in this culture that women, and this is trained in from a very young age, that, you know, part of their expectation upon them, part of just being a woman, is that you will get yourself attached to a man. And that in some way, if that doesn't happen, that you know, you're flawed in some way. I mean, clearly from a societal perspective, what a terrible thing to slap upon someone. But clearly, there's a really deeper impact, is this?
Oh, it's I think it's enormous. And I think the problem is so pervasive in the culture in terms of how women actually feel about themselves. And the book that I've written has to do with both being alone in a literal sense, in an actual sense, as women who are, in fact, alone, and having to contend with that. But it's also about addressing the psychological state of being alone. And, you know, Lisa is just the tip of the iceberg. I have, from the time that question was asked to the present, a number of years have passed by, and I've interviewed so many women, and I've just paid attention. I've also paid attention to myself, but also to my friends and colleagues. And I'm kind of shocked at how, you know, once you scratch the surface of a woman, you know, where we seem so independent, we seem so self-possessed, and in fact, as soon as you scratch the surface, what you discover is that to be alone is a stigma in this culture, and there's no question about it. I think that aloneness is also one of the most undervalued states of being that we can discuss.
Do you have some of the facts and figures about aloneness today? I mean, single people, because it's definitely a different makeup culturally today than it was a generation ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was an article that came out in the New York Times a few months ago in which the statement that it was a statement that 51% of the population of adults over the age of 15 essentially are not married. That doesn't mean that they're necessarily without a partner, but not married. If you look at that statistic and you increase the age to 18, then one quarter of all adult women over the age of 18 are at any given time unmarried. That's describing a new kind of social trend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one that's discounted in the media, it's discounted in the public at large, because we still want to describe marriage as the essential institution that we're all waiting for, rather than to see marriage as one form of partnership.
Right.
Or as an alternative, in some cases, for some women, to actually living and being alone.
And just the fact that we hold that as a society is to imply that we collectively are inferring that to not be in that state isn't somehow flawed.
Exactly.
Isn't somehow flawed. And so you mentioned in the book that we each have two opposing drives. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. What I'm really saying is that we as human beings, we of course require and need relationships of every kind. So that's one basic side of that's one polarity. the other polarity is that we are born into the world alone. We leave the world in some sense alone. And if you start to look at the issue of what it means to be alone, it doesn't have to be something terrible and formidable. And I think that's the issue that really women are dealing with all the time. That aloneness, if one allows oneself to spend time alone and to use what I call active or creative solitude, that is that part of the spectrum of aloneness that has to do with just being in a kind of spacious place where a woman can spend time resting, restoring herself, asking questions, being reflective, being creative, being meditative, really confronting all kinds of issues about, who am I if I am a woman alone? And my understanding and my contention is that as we allow ourselves to be in that kind of state, we actually find that we grow stronger for it, and that we indeed even enter any relationship, whether it's with a partner or friends or family or children, whatever it may be, we actually enter those relationships much, much more able to be present. Mm. So that it's not either or, it's really that they are complementary states.
Right, right. And these virtues of aloneness, it sounds like they apply to everyone. I mean,
they do. They do. And it's not that men don't have their issues grappling with aloneness. I mean, you know, there's still a classic in the field by a man named Terence Real called I Don't Want to Talk About It, and it's the legacy of male depression. And it's about men being alone, and it's about men whose wives have died and how quickly they want to remarry, or obviously if they're divorced, and if they don't, how often they fall into clinical depressions. So that's, and of course, there's a whole subject there about men and aloneness, but it's not mine. Mine is really about women, because what I have come across over and over again is this extraordinary sense of inadequacy and shame and fear that women often feel when they are confronted with aloneness.
Mm. So in that, what are some of the traps? So what are some of the traps that women fall into in their own minds or their own being?
The most obvious one is that there's something wrong with her.
Mm.
A woman alone, then there is something wrong with me. And I'm inadequate. It means something, and that something is something negative to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first thing. It has everything to do with a sense of self-worth. It has everything to do with a sense also of a way of imagining oneself into the future. Because we've been brought up in this culture with a very powerful sense of the romantic myth of one plus one equals a whole, and that we search for the right partner, and we spend our early lives preparing for that moment. And if that moment doesn't arrive, or if when it seems to arrive it doesn't work, women's tendency is to blame themselves.
Mm.
So that's the deepest part of why I wanted to address this subject. The other part of that is that it is understandably something that's been made to seem very fearful. We have again the kind of idea of the male bachelor. That's a very good thing to be. You know, if you're a male bachelor, you're, quote, eligible, unquote. If you are a female, women are still carrying the archetype of the spinster. Mm. Only now I'm convinced she's morphed into the woman alone.
Mm. Why do we continue to do that, do you think?
Well, first of all, part of it is how we're reared. you know, one of the issues for young children, and this is both male and female, but again, I keep veering over to the women's issue, is that we're told if we do something bad, that we have to be sent to our room or be sent into some other space, essentially being exiled from the rest of the family, or in a classroom from other people in the class. And so that there is a strong sense that and we equate aloneness as a kind of a punishment. That's part of it. We're also conditioned from the time we're very, very young children, and I mean young, really young, to see ourselves as little girls in terms of clothes, in terms of body image, and that absolutely persists. So that all of the instructions from the culture, all of the commercial instructions are really that we are supposed to stay thin, 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 that we are supposed to be vamps and sirens, and then we are supposed to make the 180 turn to becoming extraordinary wives and nurturing mothers. By the way, we've also been reared as women to be nurturers, which is wonderful to be, but one of the things we don't really do is nurture ourselves. We put our own needs at the very, very back of the line.
Yeah. My goodness.
So those are some of the, you know, I mean, if in fact in our, if we're carrying this kind of thing from the time we're very young children, and we're carrying that archetype of the spinster in our collective unconsciousness, we are already putting ourselves, we are already at a great disadvantage. And my contention is that we can't do one of the very things that would be most helpful to us, which is to spend time in solitude as a way of discovering all kinds of wonderful answers about who we are, about what the self is, and essentially about creating a very vital connection to our own selves, because what the culture does is to separate us from the self.
So does your book go into that? Does your book get into explaining those virtues?
The book goes into all of that.
Yeah.
And it's in three parts. The first part is really a kind of questioning, if I am a woman alone, who am I? Followed by what is aloneness and the distinction between aloneness and loneliness. And then a discussion about solitude, and then exactly what I've been talking about, how in the culture we're conditioned to feel very negatively about the state of aloneness. The second part is about childhood and adolescence into young adulthood. And the third part is really about what do we do as women, because you know, this is an interesting statistic. The average adult will spend half of her or his life in some sense alone. And whether we like it or not, whether by force of circumstances or even by choice, we are going to be spending time alone. So what I'm really saying is, what do we do with that fact? How can we live that fact in the best possible way?
How do we address initially the fear? I would imagine there'd be such a fear of being alone you know, if one hasn't built up their, you know, just that own okayness with that condition, there's got to be so much habitualized fear.
There is, and that's of course why that was really one of the reasons I decided to write the book. I think that for many people, again, because we're taught really to indulge in every kind of diversion that we can, we're not ever taught to value quiet, solitude, stillness, or being comfortable and listening to ourselves. So I'm really saying that I totally understand why women feel the way they do, and I know it from the people I work with because this comes up all the time. And what happens is they find themselves alone. They're often very terrified. They often start to have terrible feelings about themselves, especially if there's a divorce.
Mm.
Or some separation. Younger women, often it's about separation. Women who are somewhat older, it can be separation or divorce, and obviously widowhood. But the idea is not to run away from that fact. And of course, if you are experiencing a sense of loss, the temptation is to find a diversion. I would very strongly say that one of the things that has to happen is that we allow ourselves to be in a state of aloneness and allow ourselves to experience the feelings that come up, because there is no other way to get in touch with ourselves.
Mm.
And we will feel shame, and we will feel fear. We may even feel, by the way, we may feel relief. I mean, sometimes if we've left a terrible relationship, there can be a period of great relief, but I do maintain that there's usually some cycle of feeling a sense of loss and shame and inadequacy that we have to go through.
Absolutely, we have to process the reality of the present before we can ever really, you know, regain our capacity to go after and create, you know, what it is that we want in our future. And that's regardless. I mean, if that future is, you know, wanting of a relationship or embracing that down the road, well, you know, whatever that may be. But I would certainly imagine one would have to process the reality of the aloneness that, you know, we are who we are and where we are. Before we can move on.
Exactly. There's some extraordinary quotations. I don't know if you know the name Elizabeth Cady Stanton. She was an early feminist and a brilliant woman and a wonderful writer. And she gave, it was actually her last address to the Congress of the United States in 1892, in which she talked about the need for women to be able to be captains of their own ship, captains, pilots, and to be able to stand in solitude. And the idea, of course, is that in a very meaningful and very authentic way, it is how we come into a sense of self. It's a kind of coming-of-age experience. But it's something that we need and can use all our lives. And I think the other thing is to start to understand the distinction between aloneness and loneliness.
Mm, yes.
When I talk about loneliness, what I'm really talking about is some sense of not being connected to others or sense of loss. And every human being universally experiences loneliness. It is part of the human condition. I don't think that some of us are able to tolerate it as much as others, but I think it's very important to, when certain moments occur where loneliness is real, to let that be just a recognized state. Yes, I feel lonely. And what will I now do with that? When I talk about aloneness, I'm really saying it's essentially a neutral state. You know, it can be very bad if you're feeling isolated. It can be horrible. Or if you're feeling a state of alienation. That's the kind of negative side of the spectrum. If, on the other hand, you can see it not as something terrible, but allow yourself to be there, it suddenly opens into a very spacious and very creative and very life-affirming state. And that's what I'm trying to bring to the attention of women.
Mm. We're on the line today with Florence Falk. She is the author of On My Own, The Art of Being a Woman Alone. Her website is florencefalk.com. KPOOsanFrancisco.com. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco Reality Sandwich. We're going to take a quick musical break here at the bottom of the hour, and then we're going to return with Florence and get a little bit more in the book. And I want to ask her to speak, you know, directly to some listeners out there as far as, you know, how the book can really just, you know, help them be a little bit more present with where they are in their lives and empower and really help to truly embrace who we are as individuals, be it whether we are in a relationship or alone in our own personally empowered self. We'll be right back after a short break. And welcome back to Reality Sandwich. We're on the line today with Florence Falk, author of On My Own, The Art of Being a Woman Alone. So, Florence, I wanted to continue our conversation because I was just realizing, you know, there's so many wonderful people in my life that are single women alone, doing their own thing, making their own businesses happen, having their own lives. And I wonder, what is it about some of the characteristics of women when they find themselves, or, you know, when they are alone, that some are just, you know, fully empowered and going out there in the world and not feeling a deficit of their circumstance, and others are really, you know, stuck in the societal stigma of feeling less than or feeling isolated, or, you know, what are some of those major distinctions?
Well, you know, probably a part of it is just a kind of how we're born into the world. I mean, constitutionally, some of us are a little bit more inclined to feel comfortable than others in being alone, and it's not such a profound problem, but I think that's a very, very small minority. I think women like that, sometimes they also slide into being alone. You know, I'm kind of fascinated by the articles I've read written by women who talk about, you know, all of a sudden I'm 40 or 45 and I realize I'm a woman alone. And that's the state of my life, and it seems okay. Some people really prefer to have partnerships of different kinds, so that they're both with their partner, but also perhaps even keeping separate spaces and so on. I think that women in their 20s, because they're usually exploring life, as they should be very often, and you know, the marriage, the age of the average age of a woman's marriage is now, I think it's from 1970, it's about 4 years later, so it's about 25.1 from 21%. I'm sorry, 21, age 21 for women in 1970. So there is this sense, I think, that is happening, especially among women who have some education and obviously a certain economic means, to delay marriage more, to use alternative choices more, because they're asking hard questions about, you know, if I'm with this person, what do I want? What do I want if I'm thinking about a marriage? It's very frightening. I had a woman whom I saw yesterday afternoon, who has been in relationships where she knew that in some way she was keeping the male always at a distance, and suddenly she's in a relationship with a man where she really thinks she could be with him, and she finds herself very frightened about the intimacy of that connection. The good thing about it is that she's using some of her alone time to really start to examine what is it that keeps me from allowing myself to be fully in a relationship. That's one aspect. But so I think women in their 20s and moving into their early 30s, it's okay for a lot of them to wait a while. As they start turning, crossing that threshold, things start often to change, because first of all, you start thinking about, I've had X number of serial relationships. I want to be with somebody. So that's one thing. the biological clock starts ticking, and that's another. Mm. And I think women who at that point don't have a partner really can start to panic. A lot of women I talk to and see in their 30 to 40 age range have felt an enormous pressure, especially if they wanted, or especially if they imagine a certain life for themselves and suddenly it's not available.
Mm.
And also if they imagine having children. In several instances, those women have decided to use artificial insemination. So that people start to come to terms. It doesn't mean that they won't have relationships or even a marriage. It means at that time they may want to have a child. There's nobody on the horizon, so this is how they'll handle it. I think it's that women who have been married a long time are very often fearful of if something happens in the marriage, or the husband says, "Look, I don't want to be with you anymore," or whatever. I think that can be formidable for a lot of women, because that's when the self-blame and the self-doubt start. Although I see it with younger women too. Even if it feels like it may be the right thing to do, it's still a lot of self-blaming and a great deal of fear. It's almost like you face the sense of the future as if it's interminably about being alone, which, of course, is not at all what I'm talking about.
Well, let's go for a moment to that circumstance you were just speaking of, someone who is, you know, suddenly finds themselves alone. They're, you know, it's either a divorce, it's, you know, it could be a death, or it could be, you know, whatever the situation is, and they're sitting there in, you know, so unfortunately in that fear, just as you're describing, and they either, you know, what advice or insight would you have for them at that time?
Well, I take the advice. You know the work of Pema Chodron. She's a Tibetan Buddhist monk and has written many books that have to do with essentially where you are and how you find yourself and what you do with it. And she has this beautiful way of saying, you know, you have to start exactly where you are. And of course, in my work, it's always very clear that you can't pretend you're anywhere but where you are. You have to allow yourself to be in that space and to not tighten up around it, but allow yourself to simply be there. That requires a certain component of patience. It requires watching when fears come up and when doubts come up and when a sense of self-worth comes up, and letting yourself be with all those feelings, because we all are profoundly conditioned. We all carry stories about who we are, and a lot of those stories are very, very negative. And so what we want to do is to start seeing how wedded we've been, how conditioned we've been to allowing ourselves to live in stories about who we are in such a way that we negate the possibility of growth.
Mm.
And so you want always to see if you have to. It's like a willing suspension of disbelief. This is where I am now. There's no way in the world I will always be in this state. It's impossible. It's literally impossible. But I have to be where I am at this moment. And I have to begin to see how the old stories that I've been telling myself have been constricting my life, so that there's a possibility of expansion. And that ripening, which is different for every one of us, is exactly what I'm talking about. Because, you know, when the berry is ripe, it's you pluck it from the vine. And I use that because if you try to pluck a very green, unripened berry, you can't. It's very hard. It's sitting there. So you want to allow yourself to stay in that space and use that space as creatively as possible. That's what that is, active or creative solitude. And then gradually what happens is that you start to step out of it. There was a wonderful story the other day about a woman who just simply said, you know, that once I discovered that divorce wouldn't kill me and that being alone wouldn't kill me, I could start to step out and into my own life. So the next phase, of course, is daring to step out and to do things you've not done before, and to essentially to move on to a part of a roadmap that's unexplored. So there has to be a willingness to step into the unknown.
Well, just a moment. Before the being able to move forward part, there may be, you know, many people even listening, you know, now that are still stuck and wondering, because you're talking about breaking free of the present moment, and in order to break free of the present moment, we have to in some way be able to be okay with where we are right now. But one of the greatest challenges for any of us, regardless of what we're dealing with, to move forward from the past to the present, is that right now we're constantly being bombarded by others telling us that now isn't okay. And I would imagine for a woman alone, that certainly there'd be a lot of, you know, pressure and bombardment, particularly from family. Hey, what are you going to do? Oh, you're not married. Oh, you're not this. You know, everyone thrusting their belief systems, at somebody else.
Absolutely.
And so how do people, you know, also overcome that in order to, you know, recapture their own sense? How do you deal with the family nagging you?
I think, you know, my other major point is that friendships matter a great deal. Mm. Friendships and friends can become a kind of other family. And if you are, and also mentors, if you are allowing yourself to be with women or to even start to read stories of women who have the strength or have had the strength to be essentially the captains of their own ship, it's very, very, very powerful. I think we've all had mentors in our lives. I think women who are able to be in aloneness can be great mentors for others. I think in terms of one's own family, if parents, for example, are putting a lot of pressure on us, we have to be strong enough to use our voice, which very often we women mute. You know, there's a lot of that goes on from adolescence up, and to dare to say, you know, I have to do this in my way, and in my time. But I'm not suggesting that's necessarily the easiest thing in the world all the time. But that is finally what has to happen. Because what should you do? How do you suddenly find the mate that you want? And might you then also find somebody you don't want and sort of feel coerced into a relationship? I mean, that is almost always something that will spell a pretty bad outcome.
Mm.
I also think I think friendship matters. And women who grow comfortable with being alone are usually very good at having very strong friendships. And also to associate with people who don't really care whether you're alone or not alone. You know, some married couples don't want to invite you unless you're another married couple. There are plenty of people in the world who couldn't care less about that. So it's also partly who we surround ourselves with, how we allow ourselves to negotiate that, and how we dare to stand firm in our own state, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's the solitude part as well. So that's where you have both connection to others, friends and community, and also the willingness to be able to use solitude on your own behalf.
Certainly. Do you also, either in the book or in your practice, address this notion of being alone in a circumstance where a woman's partner has become incapacitated in a way such that they are essentially alone in that their partner may have lost the ability to communicate or really, you know, be in partnership with them.
I allude to it. I don't really address it because there are so many specific states that I couldn't deal with them all. But it's a huge issue, and certainly for older women who have partners who are profoundly incapacitated. I'm sure it's happening. Well, we know it is for a lot of women whose husbands or lovers or loved ones have been in fighting in the Iraq War and coming back profoundly wounded. So I think, you know, I think there again, yes, you have to always find other sources because it's a terribly difficult thing. I think also single mothers, you know, who are rearing children, have a very difficult time, and also, I mean, very, very much the culture is very, very hard on older women, and also, you know, there are four times as many divorced women with children who fall under the poverty line than married women with children. So in situations like this, I would say it really behooves us who are fortunate to be able to help other women who are less fortunate.
Hmm. I had a question here also. I wanted to ask you, do you have any insights on how, or any opinions, on how men are culpable in all of this?
Well, I think one of the things is that again, the idea, first of all, it depends on the degree of awareness that a man may be carrying. But, you know, there are some pretty old and entrenched relationships among people who have been married a long time, and expectations. Men have, are beginning, or certainly have to begin, to alter some of their expectations. But the idea of the woman as kind of like all things, who's supposed to still take care of the children and go to the PTA meetings and not necessarily cook the dinner, but make sure that somehow it's there, and who spends much more time with the children. I think that there are still huge expectations that women are carrying to be all things, to do all things. That's part of the women as nurturers aspect, and men want women to be nurturers. I think a lot of men want women to be dependent. You know, it you might resent the woman for being dependent, but you may also feel in some way more powerful because of it. And given the fact that women are, by and large, have more connection to their emotional lives than men, I think very often when women go off onto their own devices, a lot of men are fearful. You know, what does this mean, and why aren't you here, and how could you be in a marriage and not be with me?
Do you need me?
Yeah, lots of questions like that.
For sure. And I would imagine, certainly just harking back just a moment to the circumstance where a husband or, you know, partner has been incapacitated in some way and is no longer really, you know, sharing the role in the relationship, a woman would find herself needing to handle all kinds of things about which she's never had experience.
That's,
you know, all, you know, finances and relationships and really everything that the man used to handle,
exactly.
Not be thrust upon her.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think part of an education these days for women of all ages really is to know how to handle finances, and that's, I'm always kind of shocked at the number of women who are older who, either again through divorce or separation or widowhood, are suddenly having to deal with exactly that issue. They don't know how to they don't even necessarily know what kind of what the financial status is. So and some women, and I hear it every day. What if my husband dies and I'm not really prepared to go out and earn a living. So women, I mean, women are at this point there are more women receiving higher education than ever before. And as that increases, I think women will be able to just be independent in the sense of career and so on. I'm still saying that even if that's true, that you're still going to have to go up, swim upstream with the current that's telling you as a woman that you should be a certain way, you should look a certain way, you should act a certain way. Basically, we're still having to deal with being good girls.
We've been speaking today on Reality Sandwich with Florence Falk. She is the author of On My Own, The Art of Being a Woman Alone. And I just want to ask you here in the closing minutes, not that necessarily that finding a man is the ultimate goal for women, but
finding a partner.
But is this process of being alone and working on themselves, do women find more love and more intimacy in future relationships?
Oh, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yes.
I'm saying that as we can grow comfortable with ourselves and as we can heal that disconnection from ourselves, which is so profoundly encouraged both in our early lives growing up and in through the culture, through all of the aspects of the media that I've talked about, as we do that, we are growing the self. And as we do that, we are much, much more able to be there for other people and much more able to be intimate. There's more of us. We've been enriched. And we are no longer leaning on another person. And neediness is now no longer an active principle in our lives. It is now we have a relationship of two people who each have needs and hopefully help each other with that. But it's not about leaning. It's not about a certain kind of dependency that's about neediness. You know, women stay in relationships, often in terrible relationships, because they're afraid to be alone. And by the way, women in marriages can be more alone and more lonely than women who are, in that sense, unpartnered. I think it's, you know, you have to look at every kind of circumstance.
I thank you so much for being with me today, Florence.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And the best way for folks to get more information about you and your book is that at your website, florencefalk.com, or is there anywhere else they should go?
Well, they can look at the Today Show on the 30th, because I'll be talking on that program. But I think if they look at the website, they'll know if they are interested. There are questions and answers on the website. And also, there are links to bookstores if they're interested in getting the book.
Excellent.
And also email me through the website.
FlorenceFalk.com.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
The book is On My Own, The Art of Being a Woman Alone, Florence Falk. And definitely in our society, we have an unspoken and just omnipresent belief that a woman alone is an outcast or flawed in some way. And in her book, she invites all women to find their own paths towards an authentic selfhood, to discover the pleasures and riches of solitude, and to reconnect with others through a newfound sense of self-confidence. I mean, we were just speaking about that at the end, that instead of going into any relationship as, you know, with a sense of a need, but to go in it as a perfect equal and as an absolute, you know, partner in whatever it is that they wish to co-create. And I appreciate Florence for writing her book and for sharing her wisdom with all of our single women friends and anyone out there dealing with an aloneness or the stigma from others about being alone. We should all be able to be wonderful and beautiful in our own present state, however we happen to be. And we should remember that all personal change, positive change, begins with you. The book again, On My Own, The Art of Being a Woman Alone, Florence Falk. You can find out more information at florencefalk.com. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living. You can hear more about me at healthfulliving.org. This show and all past shows of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. We'll be back next Thursday at noon. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO, San Francisco. This show and any past shows of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com, where you can also read about upcoming shows. To learn more about Julie Matthews or Martin Matthews, go to healthfulliving.org. Thanks for listening.